9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And welcome to the Government Satellite Report Radio, the official podcast series of the Government Satellite Report, where we cover the latest news and trends impacting the use of satellites by the federal government and military. As always, I'm Ryan Traden, the host of the program and executive editor of the Government Satellite Report. Today, I've got a very special show for you all. We're recording this right before Thanksgiving, and I have to say, I am very thankful for the opportunity to be here in the SES Government Solutions offices in the DC area to talk to a veritable cornucopia of government satellite experts. And I have encouraged all of them to use as many Thanksgiving puns and jokes as possible throughout this. But my cornucopia of experts includes Tim Deaver, the Corporate Vice President of Development at SESGS.
Thanks, Ryan, for this opportunity. Look forward to talking to you.
Good to have you. Jeffrey Rollison, the Vice President of Government Affairs at SESGS.
Hey, Ryan. How are you?
I'm well. And Will Tong, the Vice President of Sales at SESGS.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having us, Ryan.
Hey, it's my pleasure to have you all on the show. I appreciate you all coming in and doing this with me in person. So now, what these gentlemen all have in common is that they all recently returned from the 2017 Global MilSatCom Conference in London, England. Now, that's something I don't have in common with them because I wasn't able to attend. But that's okay because we're going to get a download from them right now. So, gentlemen, thanks for being on the show. Welcome home, and let's go ahead and jump in. So, obviously, earlier this month, you had the opportunity attend Global MilSatCom. I didn't get to go, and I would assume many of our listeners didn't get to go as well. So this event, just in case anyone isn't aware, it's attended by a lot of military and government decision makers, as well as industry, and a lot of hot topics are discussed. Why don't we go around the table and share the most interesting thing that you heard at the conference, or what your key takeaway for the conference was that those couldn't make it?
Well, Ryan, for me, one of the key takeaways was just being at an international conference that highlighted both the U.S. and the international government perspective and the need to integrate more closely and more deliberately a whole slew of commercial satellite communication capabilities, whether it be hosted payloads or new the LEO, MEO architectural efforts that are going on, or just leveraging new commercial innovations like high-throughput satellites, the whole menu of commercial capabilities, and listening to leaders from both the U.S. Government perspective and the international community talk about how they can better get value for their dollars.
I think one of the things that really stands out for me on this conference, and Jeff mentioned it, is you hear directly from the governmental leaders, not only from the U.S., but from the European nations as well. And it's interesting to see how actually engaged they are in the future architectures and the technology growth that's going on in the SATCOM world, both on the government side, manufacturing side, and then the end result in the commercial side with the commercial offerings.
So, in my perspective, Global MilSatCom is a very unique conference. As Tim alluded to, you get a global presence not only from the government side, but also industry as a whole. So when you take a look at the government side, you really get a feel for what the U.S. government is doing, as well as the world government, and how we mix everything together, and how we support the overall community. So when we take a look at that from a global perspective, we also get feedback from the vendor community. And when you take a look at that community, you get a feel for where investments are going and also how we can better support and leverage what we're already doing from an innovation standpoint.
Yeah, so it sounds like the conference was a really good opportunity to kind of hear right from government about their future satellite plans. And that's exciting. So that's really what I want to hear from you guys. So, yeah, unfortunately, we didn't have the budget or time to get the GovSat report across the pond, so to speak. But I did look at the agenda, which I'd assume is just as good. All of our listeners are probably like, Ryan's kind of bitter that he couldn't go to London. But I looked at the agenda. I looked at a bunch bunch of the panel discussions and side sessions and workshops, and a lot of them were about things that we talk about a lot on the government satellite report. And one of those was hosted payloads, which is a topic that we cover really frequently. So what did you hear from military leaders in attendance regarding hosted payloads? Are they something that they're anticipating implementing more of in the future? Are there still concerns about hosting military payloads on government satellites? Why don't we cover off on that?
So a couple areas there. One is there's absolutely no concern among the government folks for being able to do government-hosted payloads on commercial satellites. In fact, you know, Spain does it today, Brazil does it today, several other nations do it. Luxembourg is looking forward to doing similar things. You know, they're investors in the LuxGovSat joint venture to produce a commercial satellite that has both X-band and Mil-K band on it. And then you hear within the architectural structures of what's, you know, looking forward to Skynet 6, that it could be a combination of satellites and hosted payloads. You know, the U.S. repeated their commitment of doing an EPS, a polar type AEHF component on a commercial satellite. So you hear a lot of, you know, repeats of what we heard last year, that they're still looking at it. When it makes sense, they'll do it, and the efforts continue.
Yeah, one of the events that I was fortunate enough to participate in was a pre-conference event on Monday that exclusively discussed hosted payloads, whether it be sort of some case studies or integrating that into different government portfolios from an international perspective. So we had a panel discussion entitled, you know, Leveraging Commercial and Hosted Payload Approaches to Achieve Resilience. And in that, we had reps from SESGS, Boeing, and Inmarsat was present as well. And we had some government participants on the audience side. And like Tim said, we had a discussion that highlighted both from a case studies, you know, successes perspective, which SESGS has been, you know, sort of an industry leader in demonstrating the utility of hosted payloads. But we also talked about the conditions that need to exist for those opportunities to really come to fruition, whether it be, you know, the size, weight, and power upon the spacecraft, the timing, the requirement, the funding, all of that stuff has to be sort of, you know, mutually agreeable, if you will. And so we talked about the conditions that can make that happen. So just the fact that event happened associated with this larger global MilSatCom, I mean, it just was a theme that pervaded the entire schedule.
Cool. One of the things that I saw a lot of social network and social media posts about and some articles about, and people, it seemed like a lot of people at the show were talking about, was the Air Force's analysis of alternatives, the AOA. I believe that there were a handful of panels about it. I think actually I listened to one of the panels, a gentleman from DISA, who referenced it actually pretty frequently. So I know that even DISA was looking at the AOA for guidance moving forward. So what did you guys hear about the AOA? Was there any additional information, details, update on timing that was provided? You know, based on the discussions, does it sound like ComSatCom will have a larger role in Air Force satellite networks in the future? What did you guys hear?
Yeah, I mean, so we had the co-study leads for the AOA participated in a panel, and you can tell by just them being willing to join a commercial conference, the level of priority and effort that they're putting into orchestrating a really well-rounded, articulate analysis of the different alternatives that go into building, as the government says, a resilient national security space architecture. So we were really happy to hear from Norm Yarborough and Colonel Nagy on the progress, and you heard Mike Nichols from DISA reference some of the implications there that are going to be coming out of the wideband AOA, of which we're really happy to be part of. This is new that the commercial industry is such a vocal sort of an active participant in an AOA. That's not necessarily always the case. So we're happy to have had them out there and give us some insight into where that's going. And as we understand it, that's going to be building and sort of concluding into the middle of next year. So we'll look to see how commercial can continue to contribute to our architectures.
Anybody else want to weigh in? Nah, everyone's taking a hard pass on this one.
Jeff covered it well.
Yes, very well.
LEO and MEO satellite constellations were a topic of discussion. What's the general perception and interest level in MEO and LEO from the military folks based on what you heard? What role, if any, can you see those constellations playing in military SATCOM in the future?
So with respect to LEO and MEO, I actually thought there was a lot of good representation from industry there. And the government, as well as industry leaders that were at the conference, were very excited about LEO and MEO and what those constellations are going to offer. From our standpoint, we did have an introduction into Empower to the larger audience, and there was a lot of Q&A that followed up with that, which gauges the amount of feedback that industry wanted shared about it. They had a lot of questions and they were very excited about it. What this does to the U.S. government as well as world governments, we feel this is exciting for them. LEO and MEO offers up additional capability into the end user that they currently have trouble meeting. And those unique challenges are things such as terrestrial backhaul, higher throughput ISR applications were talked about quite a bit. They talked a lot about real-time, low-latency applications as for military as well as MWR services. Things like Skype are much better with a low-latency application from a MEO or LEO standpoint. And then also support of smaller aperture terminals that currently can't close the links, and they need higher G over T, higher EIRP values within satellites. So we felt that there was a lot of excitement from that standpoint. And the government is already adopting MEO applications through O3B today, and that also was a topic from after the conferences and more of the networking sessions. There was a lot of questions about what would become available and what that shift will be and what those differences will be between what O3B is today as well as what Empower will be in the future. So I thought there was excitement from the government, and it was in line with what they were asking for with regards to how these LEO and MEO constellations are going to support what the government wants to do, whether it's the government wanting us to manage those services end-to-end, as well as how we can support the government into their own government DoD gateways going forward.
Now, just for the sake of our listeners, they might have a couple of questions because SES has come out and talked about Empower a couple of times. But they might not necessarily know what Empower is. Now, you referenced it twice, so I'm going to have to keep you on the hook here. What is Empower and why is it different?
Sure.
Just in case our listeners...
So O3B Empower is our next constellation of O3B. It is going to be the most powerful and most flexible constellation. With the constellation, what you're going to be able to see is each satellite is going to be able to be to provide 4,000 plus beams per satellite, and it gives you a multiple terabit satellite constellation that's highly flexible for the government users. And that flexibility is going to include the ability to go back to our own commercial teleports. It can also be provisioned to be able to go into DoD gateways. And it's going to be highly flexible in the ability to dynamically allocate bandwidth and power to meet variable throughput requirements for whatever user needs it, whether that be a small antenna aperture, an ISR application, larger VSAT terminals, flexible, portable, mobile. And these are all tenets that the government has really asked for in the past, and that's why we feel that this constellation is going to be largely successful to bring to market for the government users.
It's exciting. I can't wait to see what kind of capabilities that enables.
So I'd add on to that, because one of the other themes of the conference was developing more resilient capabilities in the, you know, coming up in the face of, you know, enemy conflict and stuff like that. A lot of concerns that standard commercial capability won't be available, subject to jamming. You cover wide areas, so a lot of different folks are in your footprint, et cetera, you know, good and bad. And it's hard to do anything about them if they're within a country where they're kind of somewhat protected. As we move forward with some of the satellite designs and stuff like that, with the high throughput satellites, the smaller beams, you get some resilience in there. You know, adding the NSA-approved encryption on our satellites and the fleets going forward is going to make them less susceptible to command intrusion and stuff like that going forward. And we're incorporating all that type of stuff into the O3BM power. So it's going to have small beams, but also because of the 4,000-plus beams and the phased array design, it actually would be able to do some anti-jam mauling, that if there's interference coming from an area, rather, you know, intentional or accidental, we'll be able to null out that interference. It's also going to carry the latest NSA-approved encryption on both the uplink and the downlink to make the link secure. So taking and listening to our government customer and what their requirement sets and adding them into the future constellations, mm-hmm. and make it more resilient and protected going forward.
Excellent. Well, you've stole a little bit of thunder from my next question by talking about the resiliency. So my next question was going to be all about that. So it kind of feels like I go to a lot of satellite conferences, none across the pond, but here in the U.S., and it seems like the wet blanket that's been hanging over every single one of these conferences has been space is a contested domain now. We're not alone in space. We don't have the edge that we used to have. Our adversaries are more sophisticated. They can shoot down our satellites. They can null our jam our satellites. So was that something that you guys heard at Global MilSatCom? What are some of the alternatives the military is exploring to help ensure that they aren't denied satellite communications? Because I know it still is a pretty huge tactical edge for our military. What role will COMSATCOM, aside from steerable beams, because we covered that, what role can COMSATCOM play in making these services and capabilities more resilient?
Yeah, so a couple of things. Yeah, I mean, it was repeated throughout, you know, almost every government that got up to speak. They talked about their concerns of the, you know, contested environment and where the threat vectors are going in the future and what they're doing about it. You know, there's been space systems that have addressed that in the past. You got Skynet 5, AHF, but they're expensive, right? So now what you've got to do is you got to find the match that I can't do Battlestar Galactica to meet all the requirements that are out there and the throughput that users are demanding now. You know, 200 kilobit circuit just doesn't meet the requirements that are out there, and that's what you get on a truly fully protected satellite. So, you know, finding that mix, and that's part of what's going on in the AOA. How do I do wideband communications but make sure I'm protected, flexible, and can be more survivable across a range of conflicts going through there? So, you know, and everybody, I think, had a little different take on what their answers were. There was a lot of questions on what's the real definition of resilient architectures, and that's still out there. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody kind of has a little different answer. But nonetheless, I mean, I think we all agree that you know, the threat environment's changing. We need to be able to address that. We need to be more reactive to it and be able to ensure communications in light of those new threats.
Yeah. You know, and even just a couple of days ago, General Hyten, the Strategic Command commander, referenced that he would not support buying, you know, large constellation satellites, which kind of leads us from the commercial perspective down the road of, okay, well, if you're not going to buy, you know, entire constellations of satellites, Tim references Battlestar Galactica, then you need to leverage the capability that's on orbit to sort of disaggregate and distribute the mission effort that the governments, whether U.S. or international, that they have. We in the commercial market are putting a lot of investment dollars and a lot of capability, thought, and technology into satisfying those needs to distribute and disaggregate missions, and to do that sort of securely and reliably across our respective networks. So that, you know, Tim's point was spot on. Is, you know, if the governments are relaying the fact that they want this, commercial equities are able to do it.
Excellent. So we are running out of time. We've talked about a lot of great stuff, but we've talked a lot. So we're going a little long. So let's do a speed round, a little lightning round action here. Obviously, Thanksgiving's this week, which means we're coming up at the end of the year, which, you know, holiday season. We're going to start talking about 2018 projections, looking ahead. What do you guys think will be kind of the big story for ComSatCom in 2018? Let's kind of go around the table and say how you think ComSatCom is going to positively affect the military's satellite communications in 2018 and beyond. Who wants to start? Will has been chosen to start.
Okay, yeah, sure. So with 2018, I think there's many different ways we can really look at what is going to remain the same and what's going to change. With regards to ComSatCom, I think from not just from the satellite operator standpoint, but also from the integration and ground infrastructure standpoint, there's a lot of innovation being done. So when you take a look at all this innovation, the government from now until the next 3 or 4 years is going to take a look at their remote terminals or infrastructure, where to really move to the future and be able to support all these requirements that they do have. So I think what we're going to see is more of an emphasis on commercial SATCOM, how we can support today with our wide beams, whether it makes sense for the government to move to HTS and managed services, and also taking a look at future constellations and hardware in general from the ground infrastructure standpoint to take a look at and see where their investments need to be made. From our standpoint within industry, we have to take those cues from the government to find out where we want to put our investments as well to better support their missions. So I think in 2018, with all this innovation coming to a head, I do think the partnership between the government and industry is going to be very much strengthened. I think there's going to be a lot more dialogue, and I think a lot of important decisions will be made in that year to support missions in the out years.
And I think Will hit it. It's going to be the evolution of our mission partner relationship, right? There, and the AOA is going to be sort of the long pole in that tent. And how that AOA comes out and enables the government to sort of program future year funding or make future year funding decisions is really going to be the key decision coming this summer, late in the year, on how they can look at future year budgets and really leverage our ability to be a fully integrated mission partner.
Yeah, just turn it back to the kind of the global scene there that you know, started to run out of time and turn into little pumpkins here. But nonetheless, you know, you're going to have the UK is going to be doing their Skynet acquisition. You got ESA pursuing their GovSat program and a lot of things to include, as Jeff mentioned, the US's AOA kind of come to fruition next year. So 2018, launch of LEO satellites, etc. It's going to be an exciting year, and looking forward to that. And hopefully during our conversations we didn't ruffle anybody's feathers.
Yeah, that's two late Thanksgiving puns for Tim, for Tim Beaver. Well
more
done.
More of a Halloween pun.
I was going to say that two out of the three of you turkeys didn't make a Thanksgiving pun despite being encouraged to do so. Anyway, it is almost Thanksgiving. I know you guys are trying to clear your desks off to go enjoy a national holiday, a couple of days of vacation. So I do want to thank you all for opening your office to me, which is great. Beautiful place. Thanks for having me here and for taking the time on such a crazy week to speak with us and have this really informational discussion. This was great.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate your time.
Excellent. For our listeners, I do want to thank you guys for joining us for this discussion as well. If you like this format, let us know, because we're hoping to do something like this for all of the major satellite conferences in 2018, kind of get a few folks together in a room and talk about the conference and what happened. Also, if you did like this content, I would encourage you to check back for a similar podcast from the GovSat Report in the near future, and also go to www.govsatreport.com for more content just like this.